God talks, so have this all right. And so this is a children's song, but you're going to get some good out of it. I think you're going to have some fun anyway. First I saw the farmer plowing up his ground. Said he saw Bull Ranger running around and around. Come a hoop, 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 and a high-low all through the merry train. Come a ram-tam-tam with a hippy-tippy-tam and away with the rally with the bow-wow-wow. Come a hoodle-doodle-doodle with a bugle horn. Through the woods he ran, brave boys, through the woods he ran. Now, did you get it? Listen, listen to the chorus. Come a hoop, 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 and a high-low all through the merry train. This is the men coming in on their horses. Come a ram-tam-tam with a hippy-tippy-tam. The horses are jumping up and down, getting ready to go. And away with the rally with it. Here goes the dogs, bow-wow-wow. Here goes the bugle. Comes a hoodle-doodle-doodle with the bugle horn. And here they take after the fox. Away they go through the woods after the fox. Okay. So I'm going to start it over.
Wait, we've got it now.
If you folks want to sing along with me on the chorus, come on. First I saw Mr. Farmer plowing up his ground. Said he saw Bull Ranger running around and around. Come a hoop, 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 and a high-low walk through the merry train. Come a ram-tam-tam with a hippy-dippy-tam and a wave with the rally with a bow-wow-wow. Come a hoodle-doodle-doodle with a bugle horn. Through the woods he ran, great boys, through the woods he ran. Next I saw was a maiden combing out her locks. Said she saw Bull Ranger among the geese and flocks. Come a hoop, 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 and a high-low all through the merry train. Come a ram-tam-tam with a hippy-tippy-tam and away with a rally with the bow-wow-wow. Come a hoodle-doodle-doodle with a bugle horn. Through the woods he ran, great boys, through the woods he ran. This is the fun. The kids all get a kick out of this. Next I saw was a blind man, blind as he could be. Said he saw Bull Ranger run up a hollow tree. Come a hoop, 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 with a high low all through the merry train. Come a ram-tam-tam with a hippy-tippy-tam and a bay with a rally with a bow-wow-wow. Come a hoodle-doodle-doodle with a bugle horn. Through the woods he ran, great boys, through the woods he ran.
Ryan and I were visiting last week, and we were talking about the image that a lot of people have of West Virginians, and I think, you know, it's kind of like, you know, a small little project of mine to not necessarily change that so much as it is to fill in some of the gaps. I think that through television and a lot of the media that is out there has projected West Virginians as being, you know, totally illiterate and totally without any sense of beauty around them. And we were talking about how wonderful it is to drive sometimes 2 miles into a private hollow, where, you know, a hollow being the space between the hills that are close together. And you get in there, and there's no one coming by that house, and it's immaculate, and there are flowers, and there's a barn built, and for no reason other than that they appreciate the beauty of it. The doors weren't just doors. They have hearts carved in them, and, you know, beautiful things like that, you know, and we see that all the time. And I think a lot of that image of West Virginians is not out there to a lot of people. And while we can't take you around and show you all those places, sometimes we wish we could, because when we see it, it's see what's being projected on television and in magazines and things, sometimes we get Well, it's just a shame. It's really the world's lost more than it is ours, you know, that if you don't realize the beauty that is here. And also the sense of, it's more than a sense of pride, because pride almost makes it sound like a shallow thing. It's more than that. And one of the things that I know I was most, I don't know if it was surprised or just impressed with, is feeling for education that people have here. I mean, this is a deep passion for learning, rather than just, I want my children to get a grade and to, you know, to get out there and get a job. It's something it's just a thirst for the knowledge and for the beauty of the written word. And I was talking to a man who's well in his 80s, lives there in the county, and he said that they lived way up remote by themselves, and every morning when they'd come down for breakfast, their dad would start out with, you know, I don't know how much schooling their father had even, but he would start out, instead of good morning or sit down, he would start out with one verse of a poem from Longfellow, and he would point to one of the kids and they'd do the next verse. This would do the next verse. Do the next verse. You never know which verse is going to be yours. So you have you're supposed to know all the verses. And you know, they went through, and they were just doing that because they loved it. Not because anybody was going to give them a grade or a pat on the back or pay them any money for that. Because they loved the poetry and the learning and I see that so many times. Even when you go down into the coal fields in southern West Virginia, it's so much that way. And I know one of the deans at the college there where I go to school said that when he was in the service, he would write a letter home to his mother, who only went to the fourth grade. But he would write a letter, she would mail it back to him with punctuation corrections. Red commas. And he was a college professor, and he said, you know, she still does that to her children. Corrects the grammar and the punctuation. But in the service, I thought that was really, really interesting. But so a lot of the people there know long recitations and that they've learned by heart. You've heard Phyllis Marks do some when she was here. And they remember them forever. I think a lot of us have lost that art of remembering these things. It's not just a matter of rote memory. They're going through the story, you know. They're making sense of the thing instead of just, you know, drilling it into heads. And that's when they learned the poetry, they were doing that. And that's why I think they can remember the, you know, 25 verses to the old ballads. They're going through the story instead of just, you know, trying to recall it from rote. So Rita has one of those that I think is really interesting. She's going to do that one for us. You may hear it again. If you want to hear it again, you may hear it again at 1 o'clock, because I think she didn't request it. Well, I wanted you to hear it in here and maybe get it on your tape recorder, too.
This is humorous. I think you'll find it so. You know, at the back several years ago, everyone was trying to invent something. I remember back when I was a little girl, they were trying to invent perpetual motion, and men would spend hours and hours and hours and hours trying to invent perpetual motion. And they invented all kinds of funny things. So this is about a wife of one of those inventors. It's easy to talk of the patience of Job. Job had nothing to try him. If he'd been married to Bidgy Brown, folks wouldn't have dared to come nigh him. Now trials indeed, I'll tell you what. If you want to be sick of your life, you just come exchange places with me a while. For I'm an inventor's wife. And such inventions. I'm never sure when I pick up my coffee pot that Bidgy ain't been improving it. It may go off at a shot. Why didn't he invent an apple peeler? Well, it was a wonderful thing, I'll say. It peeled, and it peeled, and it never stopped till the apple was all peeled away. And as for locks, and clocks, and mowing machines, and reapers, and all such trash, Bidgy invented lots of them, but they didn't bring in any cash. But
workshop and whistle and think and plan, inventing a jew's harp to go the steam. While the children are going barefooted to school or the weeds are choking our corn. When Benji and me kept company, it wasn't this way, you know. Our folks all thought he was awful smart, but that was years ago. He was handsome as any picture then and had such a clear, bright way. I didn't think the time would come when I'd rue my wedding day. But when I'm forced to chop the wood and tend the farm besides and see Benji sitting there, I just broke down and cried. We lost the whole of our turnip crop while he was inventing a gun. I counted one of my miracles when it busted before it was done. He turned it into a burglar alarm. It ought to give things a fright. It'd scare an honest man out of his wits to set that off at night. Sometimes I wonder if Bidgie's crazy inventing all these things. Have I told you about his bedstead yet? Well, it was full of wheels and springs. It had a clock face at the head, and all you had to do was wind them hands, and at any time you said, that bed got up and shook itself and bounced you right out on the floor. It shut up just like a trap, and you couldn't sleep anymore. Well, Benji, he fixed it all complete, and he soldered at 5:30, and he hadn't worn, got into the thing, and dear me, sakes alive, and wheels began to whiz and whir, and there was an awful snap, and there that bedstead was with Benji inside, shut up just like a trap. I screamed, of course, but was no use. I didn't know what to do. I worked the whole night through trying to open that pesky thing. Last I got in a fright. I couldn't hear his voice inside, and I thought he might be dying, and I grabbed up a crowbar, and I smashed it in. And there was Bitch, peacefully lying, inventing a way to get out again. That's all very well to say, but I don't believe he found it if I'd left him there all day. Now, friends, since I've told you my story, do you wonder I'm tired of life, or think it's strange I've often wished I weren't? I might tell you I have been saying that for 73 years.
You learned it that long ago?
Uh-huh.
You were nine?
I was eight.
Years old.
I had a friend, it must be a terribly long, old poem, because I had a friend who at that time was about 50 years old, and she had learned it when she was 8 years old, so you count it yourself, I'm not that much better.
So she learned it when she was 8 and taught it to you when you were 8.
Uh-huh. And she told me, she said, I always wanted to hear her say it, and she said, now I'm going to teach it to you and you can say it for yourself. And I said, I'll never learn all that. She said, oh, yes you will. I was only 8 when I learned it. And you're going to learn it. I learned it.
Yeah. What were you saying?
I don't know, they won't be in here anymore, murder story.
This is Wexford Girl. There are versions of Wexford Girl floating around out there, and I think it's kind of nice to hear another, you know, a real good version of that. You want to hear her sing that?
Yeah.
Was in the town of Wexford, I once did live, and well, was in the town of Wexford, I owned a flowering dell. Was there I saw a pretty fair maid, with a dark and rolling eye. I asked her if she'd be my bride, my wishes to apply. At 6 o'clock one evening, to the sister's house I went. I ask her if she'd walk with me our wedding day upon. We walked and we talked till we came, I'm going to get that a little bit higher. We walked and we talked till we came to level ground. I tore a stick from off the hedge, I knocked this fair maid down. I knocked her to her bended knee, for mercy she did cry. Oh, Johnny, my dear, don't murder me here, I'm not prepared to die. I paid no heed to what she said, but beat her all the more, until she lay upon the ground all in one bleeding gore. I took her by her yellow hair, and drew her o'er the ground, and threw her into the river that runs through Wexford town. Lie there, you Wexford girl, to you I'll ne'er be tied. Lie there, you Wexford girl, you ne'er will be my bride. I went into my mother's house at 12 o'clock that night, awakening her in a hurry and in a terrible fright. Saying, Johnny, my son, what have you done? There's blood upon your clothes. The answer that I gave her, been bleeding at the nose. I asked for a candle to light myself to bed, and also for a handkerchief to tie my aching head. I rolled and I tumbled, no pleasure could I find, for the gates of hell wide open before mine eyes did shine. A week or two after that, this fair maid's body was found, a-floating down the river that runs through Wexford town. My sisters, her sisters swore my life away, good reason she had no doubt. She swore I was the identical man who took her sister out. And when I'm dead and buried, good people for me pray, for the murder of that Wexford girl and taking her good life away. I want you to notice something that has, and we miss it. So many people will miss this. In the very first verse, it was there I saw a pretty fair maid with a dark and rolling eye. I asked her if she'd be my bride. My wishes to comply.
Is everybody going to join?
My wishes?
My wishes to comply. It wasn't one for me.
Do you notice that that same storyline, that's the storyline of Knoxville Girl?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Knoxville Girl was taken from this. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
You heard Knoxville Girl, but it's much more recently than this.
It was a story. It was a true story. And this was a true story. And it was a true story.
Can I ask a question at this point, actually?
Uh-huh.
I'm curious, in at what times you would be singing these songs, the secular ballads. Would you sing them every evening gathered with family? Would you perform them in a more formal way for people? Would you just sing them around the house while you were doing
chores? Usually around the house because, like I told you, I come from a family of 13 children. And we made up our own entertainment. And one would recite a poem, and then we'd all sing a ballad, and we'd sing hymns, and we just had fun. After the work was all done of the night, then we put on programs. And my dad was pretty bad about helping us out, too. He did everything from playing the blindfold with us to teaching us all these songs and playing just along with us on these programs.
See, that still is a big part of life in West Virginia, particularly in the rural areas, like the county where Rita and I live. But in those days, the isolation of these hills made it there. You know, there wasn't anywhere to go if you had time to get there. There, you know, when you were finished with the work, everything was these farms in here were very self-sufficient. Not only did you do the work, you made the tools to do the work. You made the tools to make the tools. You know, you did it all yourself. And in what you could not do, you invented ways of doing things, but also what you could not do, you learned to do without. There wasn't any store. If you can imagine life without a store, you know. Now, when Ryder was growing up, there would have been, you know, but when this country, this state was first settled, there wasn't a place to go to the store to buy anything. And in the same way that went with what you did for entertainment, because, you know, you don't see, there never was, I don't guess, a group of people that just worked, you know. So when you got the work done, you still needed something to feed your spirit, and that's what they did. And many times, I know my daughter moved here to live with me when she was 13. She had been living outside of Washington, D.C., in that suburban area there. Well, how much entertainment can you get, you know? It's all there, you know, everything you want to do within walking distance where she was. And she moved out a mile and a half up the holler where I lived on the farm, and she would write letters back to her girlfriends, and this was at 13, and they said, you just have so much more to do out there. And she was really busy doing things. She learned to drive right away so she could at least drive out the dirt road, you know, to get out to where the neighbor children were. And they always had something going. And you don't divide up according to, you know, seventh graders do this, or only the high schoolers do this. There's not enough of them to do that. So when she was, you know, 13, she was doing things with people in their 20s and their mothers and fathers. You needed that many to make a ball team, you know. You needed everybody to do this together. And when I sold real estate for 8 or 9 years here in West Virginia, and I would have people from outside of this area coming in, and they would, one of the things that they noticed is that the oddest thing here, teenagers talk to old people. That's the way they would put it. What is it? I keep seeing teenagers sitting on the porch talking to this, you know, that fellow over there, and you know, an old man that's obviously in his 80s or 90s, he's going fishing with two young boys. and they do, and that's not necessarily their grandmother or their grandfather either. It's just their fishing buddy or, you know, somebody that they wanted to sit and talk with for a while.
And she was talking about the stores. Of course, when I was a girl, there was stores in the little village. And it's a little village. Someone asked me about it yesterday. It's Cox's Mills. And it was founded by Cox's, who had a grist mill. You know what a grist mill is, where they make meal and flour. And also a sawmill. So there was two mills. So it's Cox's Mills. And someone asked me about it yesterday. I told them what the name of the little village was. And I said, now when you see that sign, don't blink your eyes because you'll miss the town. But there was this store, and one thing that I remember as a child, people came in with their road wagons. And there was a team of horses, you know, pulling this road wagon, and bought a wagon load of groceries at a time, sugar, and at that time there was no grist mill, and flour, and just the coffee, just the necessities. And they only came twice a year. And then we children, we thought it was wonderful. We'd get on the wagons, they'd let us ride on the wagons, and we'd ride almost home with them to get to walk back. But, you know, it was that way. But when you ask about how we did this, the neighboring children would come in. We always had something going, always in the community. I'm a 55-year 4-H leader, and we always had something. I had a club going before there ever dreamed about 4-H. But we would get together in the wintertime. We'd popcorn, make popcorn balls, and make candy, taffy. We pulled taffy. Oh, my, how we pulled taffy. And did all those things. In the summertime, we had our potato roasts. We had our corn roasts. We got out and played ball. Oh, well, we played Long Town. Now, you folks wouldn't know how to play Long Town, but we played Long Town.
What is Long Town?
Well, you have your bases, you have your pitcher, and your catcher, and your batter, but you have a base here, and a base here, and a base here, and then home. Well, it was Long Town because if you could make it from where you batted the balls to this place, that you was safe. You could make it the rest of the way pretty well. And so we called it Long Town. And this was Long Town, here.
Oh, the second base.
The second base was Long Town. We played that, we played the base, and you would never believe it, but I was the fastest runner in school. I could outrun any boys.
We believe it.
I had one of them tell me the other day, I saw him, and he said, "But Rita, do you still run?" And he turned to my granddaughter that was with me and said, "Do you know that she could outrun every boy in the school one time?" And that was a one-room school with 8 grades in it. I outrun all the boys. But I have a heart condition. I've had it all my life. And I would run so long and I'd fall over. It didn't scare them a bit. They just went ahead and played base until I come to them. But oh, we had a wonderful time. The kids today can't even begin to know what a wonderful time it was. And this was before there ever was any wars. You know, I remember all those wars. And it just grew. The wars just ruined everything. Mm-hmm. All that peace, all that beauty. Everything was so beautiful. Everything is still. I stopped on my way from breakfast this morning to listen to the birds sing.
Oh, really? Yeah, when it got cool. What happened?
Oh, they were just singing. So. But we had some, and we still have beauty if it could only be appreciated. They don't appreciate it.
Well, we get so busy riding around so fast in cars that we didn't miss it.
I had a wonderful life. Mm-hmm. I still have.
Did you used to do much coloring or painting as children? Did you make things with your hand? Or
oh, yes.
Kind of more like games and things?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we did.
Used to make things and color?
Yes. We had a fox and goose board that we made ourselves.
What is that?
Well, it's a whole lot like checkers, only it isn't like checkers. It has, you play it like checkers, but it's really a cross on a board, and it's marked out in different places, and we use buttons. One would have a red button, one would have a black button, one would have a white button, and we'd move them a whole lot like checkers, only it not played exactly like checkers. And we made up all kinds of games.
Do your great-grandchildren still play some of these games? Have you taught them?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, yes. They know that. You know what? They have a saying in my home. My grandchildren and my great-grandchildren, they'll something come up, they'll be talking about, and someone will say, "Now listen, Grandma's going to have a song for that."
See, before we go here, we have to break a little early this time because they changed the class structure. But sing us another one of the children's songs that your children like to hear, those funny ones.
Well, I don't know the old ones. Like I told you about the one they like the best is Turkey in the Straw. Uh-huh. And that is an old fiddle tune. You'll hear it all over the place. Wherever there's a fiddle being played, you'll probably end up sometime hearing Turkey in the Straw. But their favorite was the one I sang.
Mm-hmm.
Was Hoop, Hoop, Hoop and a High Low. They like that.
A lot of the children's songs have those little syllables in them. You know, I guess they were meant to either imitate an animal or a clown or something, but sometimes it seems
it's just older. A lot of the older songs, you're going to find out whether they're children's songs or not, have a lot of syllables to fill in.
Mm-hmm. Keep the beat or something?
Mm-hmm. To fill in, and they didn't have words to fill out
what they wanted to write, so they put in...
Right, do you have a version of the farmer's cursed wife, the devil on the farm?
I have that, but I don't sing it.
Good note today. We'll see you all tomorrow.